Hello and welcome to another episode of the Uncommon Energy Podcast. My name is Trainer Chip Ritchie, joined here as always by my regular co-host Azul GG. What's up, Azul?
Doing pretty good, Chip. Super excited for this episode. Got another guest on for this one.
We do indeed. Those watching on YouTube have already seen his face sitting there smiling at us. He is an official caster for Pokemon live stream. Most recently, you've heard his voice for the Players' Cups, for the European International Championships. He's got multiple top eight regional finishes, a special event win as well, and most recently a top eight in Liverpool with good old Malamar. He is the co-host of the OmniPoke YouTube channel, having over 20,000 subs on YouTube, over 6,000 followers over there on Twitch, a Pokemon TCG cubing expert, Joe Bernard, joining us from across the pond. What's going on, Joe? How you doing, man? Happy to have you here.
That's amazing. That's the longest intro I've ever had, and the most important one was the one at the end as well. So yeah, thanks for having me on. I listen every week, so I'm really happy to be a part of this.
A fan. Happy to have you here, man. We really appreciate the support, and I'm looking forward to this week's episode. And you may have guessed, but this week we are going to be talking about cubing in the Pokemon TCG. It's one of all three of our favorite ways to play Pokemon. You have maybe heard people talking about cubing in Pokemon before and wondered, what exactly is that all about? What's going on there? Or maybe you are a cubing expert, someone who's done multiple different types of cubes. You have a cube of yourself. Regardless of where you stand, I think there will be something for everyone to enjoy in this week's episode, as we're going to be talking about all kinds of fun stuff related to cubing, from what exactly it is, how it works, how to get started, how to build a cube, into our favorite types of cubes. So I think there will be something here for everyone to enjoy. I'm looking forward to it. But before we get into all that, let's just get a quick little recap on how everyone's weeks have been. Azul, you're just coming back from vacation, man. How was Hawaii?
It was pretty good. Yeah, it was my first time in Hawaii. Didn't go either of the years that I was there for Worlds, because I didn't get my invite. That's back when I first started playing. So first time in Hawaii. And yeah, it was just really cool. Got to swim with some fish, swim with some manta rays. It was a fun time. Sun, beaches. So yeah, very good to be back, though. I'm excited to get back to the content grind, of course, starting with the podcast this week. So yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm excited to talk about some cubing.
Yeah, you're looking a little tan. I can tell you've been in the sun a little bit. Maybe not quite as dark as I would have thought you to come back, but a little darker. Pretty good week for me as well. I actually had a pretty busy weekend here. I spent time getting the nursery ready for the incoming baby. I did some painting on the wall. We did a board and batten style accent wall, which is a pretty involved process. I had to hang some boards up on the wall. It was a little bit more in-depth of a project than I realized. But that's all right. We got it done. Paint is currently still drying, and got to peel the tape off the wall, but it'll all be done. I'll post a picture over on Twitter once it's all said and done, because I'm pretty proud of myself. I think we did pretty good there. What about you, Joe? How's your past week been, man?
Well, you can probably tell from my tan as well that I've been jet-setting for a week. I actually try to avoid the sun at all costs, but I've been in Dubrovnik in Croatia for a week with my family, and it's been a great time. Yeah, it's my second time being there, but it was great to be back.
Sweet, man. Okay, and before we hop into things, let's give Joe a little bit of a chance to kind of talk about himself. I know I did a little intro for him, but talk to us a little bit about YouTube, Joe, kind of what you do on YouTube. I know you've been making videos for forever. You've been involved with Pokemon for a long time. So why don't you just talk to us, just a quick little rundown of your history with the game, collecting. I know you're a big collector as well. So yeah, just give us a little rundown.
Yeah, well, I sort of got back into the game when I was about 14. And this was right around the time when Stormfront was being released. So that's kind of the era we're talking about. Just started opening some packs. I actually opened an Uxie Level X, and I was astonished by what a Level X was. I had no idea what was going on with a card. And because it was Uxie, I naturally like found my way towards competitive TCG like content and articles and stuff like that. And that's the first time I learned the rules. And I was pretty bad at the game for a long time. I was just playing with myself and just a few friends and not really going to tournaments for a few years. Started as soon as I could drive, basically, was when I started attending events. And the YouTube channel came shortly after that, really. So this was right around the time I started university. Been doing content on the channel for a number of years now, mostly competitive content, but also like to sprinkle in alternate format stuff, Cube being among them primarily, because it is actually my favorite way to play Pokemon and enjoy the game.
Yeah, and it's one of mine and Azul's favorites as well. So we were excited to do this episode. And when we knew that when we did an episode about cubing, we wanted to have a guest on. And we thought you were the perfect person to do it because we know you've done tons of different cubes. You've got a couple cubes yourself. So let's break down kind of what we'll be talking about this week. Of course, just a general intro to cubing, what exactly it is, how it works, and then the different types of cubes that exist, because the beauty of cubing in the Pokemon TCG is that there's tons of different ways you can do it. And there's, you know, I'm sure there are plenty that you're a fan of, Joe, that you don't like. I know that there's some that I like, some that I don't like. So we can talk about all those different types of things. Of course, we will have this week's Guess That Flavor Text, where our guest, Joe Bernard, will be trying to jump ahead of both Azul and myself, as Azul and I don't have very many points, and Joe has a chance to take the lead. I gotta say, I'm confident in you this week, Joe. We'll see if you can do it. And we'll close things out talking about just kind of some of our favorite types of cubes. We're not going to really spend any time this week talking about standard or predicting the world's meta or anything like that. There will be plenty of time for Azul and I to do that in the next couple weeks. We want to really focus in on the alternate ways to play the Pokemon TCG. So we'll start things off by talking about what exactly is cubing. What is a Pokemon cube? But I guess before we do that, drafting. How does drafting work? Because at its core, cubing is a way to draft the Pokemon TCG. So Azul, I know you've played other types of games with drafts and stuff like that, DC deck building and stuff like that. What exactly is drafting, and what makes it such a fun way to play a card game?
So drafting is basically there's a pool of cards, and there is a way, depending on the game that you play, to get those cards and then kind of build your deck around those cards. So in Pokemon specifically, you basically kind of make packs out of your cards. The one that people are probably most familiar with is drafting in Magic. When you go to, like, you know, a card store and you play Sealed, I believe is what it's called, where you get like four packs. Or it's not Sealed. I forget the name of it. Sealed's when you get four packs and you build your deck out of the packs. But when you get four packs and you pick a card and you pass the pack to the right, that's like the most traditional way that people draft, right? Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, that's probably the one people know the best, is just drafting in Magic. And I actually really like drafting in Magic. But then you have other stuff, too. Like you said, you mentioned DC deck building, where there's a big stack of cards in the middle of the table and you lay a couple out off the top. And you basically try to buy cards from the center of the table to create your deck like that way. And then there's even other ways that drafting has entered other games in, you know, in the world or whatever. Like TFT, the League of Legends thing, is basically drafting. Or Battlegrounds from Hearthstone is also basically drafting. It's kind of all different ways that you kind of create a board state, more so like with TFT or, you know, with DC deck building. Or Pokemon or Magic, you create your deck, right? So different ways that you get cards to create, you know, your board state or your deck, and then you utilize those cards in a way to try and win the game. And of course, in Pokemon, your win conditions are to draw six prize cards generally. So you create your Pokemon deck through, you know, drafting your cards. And in Pokemon specifically, like I said, generally with cubing, with drafting, is you take the cube, whatever it is, it's a bunch of cards, and you break it down into packs, and then each player, you know, if it's a 6-man cube, an 8-man cube, whatever, each player gets a certain amount of packs, usually with, you know, 10 to 20 cards in it, and then you pick a card out of, you all start with a pack, you all take your first pack, take a card out of the pack, and then you pass your pack to the left or the right, and then let's say you go to the right, you take one of your 15 cards out of your pack, your first pack, pass your pack to the right, and then you get the pack from the person on your left. You take their pack now that has 14 cards. You take one card out of that, add that to your stack. You pass that pack to your right, and you proceed like that until the pack is gone and everyone has all the cards, 15 cards from a couple cards from each pack. And then you open the next pack, and then you take a card out of that, pass to the left, and proceed until you're out of packs. And then you take the cards that you have from there remaining, or those, what is it? If it's four packs, you'd have those 60 cards, and then you build, you know, a 40 card deck or a 50 card deck or a 60 card deck, depends on the cube specifically, of course. So, and then you build a deck with those cards that you did draft. And there's a lot of different ways that people build their cube. So that initial stack of cards that gets broken down into packs, you know, is always different depending on whose cube you play with. But I think I did a pretty good job there breaking down drafting. I don't know if there's anything else you guys want to mention about it. But yeah, there's a lot of different ways to do it these days within games.
Yeah, Joe, anything to add there about just what drafting is? I think Azul did a pretty good job explaining, like you said.
I'm usually really bad at those kind of things, so I tried my best.
That was pretty in-depth, yeah. Yeah, not too much else to add on specifically the drafting part of things. Just remember that not everyone knows what everyone else has, so you're sort of working with imperfect information the entire time. And you're basically assessing, when you're taking a card, you're basically saying no to like seven other cards if you're going around a table of eight. So you're having to remember what you do and don't have access to. And you're also trying to assess what can potentially come back to you as well. Because even though a card can be later in a pack, it can still be useful for your specific deck or what you're trying to build. Especially as you get later into packs, when people start going down certain avenues, you can try and identify cards which are like helpful to everyone, and then cards that are probably more helpful to you and less to others. So there's a lot going on during that process. It's not as simple as just pick the best card possible, because sometimes there are things where, based on your previous picks, your own sort of usefulness of a card will change as the draft goes on.
So I know in go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's like something specific to when you have perfect knowledge of like a cube or something like that. And it's like that's like very different, like in, like I said, like drafting in like Magic, where you have four packs, like actual packs of cards, you know. You have no clue what's going to be in those packs. You have an idea of what you can build your deck around it, but yeah, like in a Pokemon cube, or if you, like I said, like something like Battlegrounds or TFT, where you have perfect knowledge of the available units or cards or whatever. Yeah, you want to draft with, you can draft with that knowledge of like what you could get in the future.
So we talked about Magic a couple of times, which I think is like probably the most, I think you'll hear just when talking about things in general, when it comes to the Pokemon TCG, people comparing to Magic a lot because it is the biggest and most popular competitive card game. So it just kind of naturally becomes the comparison, like the cornerstone point to compare your own game against and the way things are done. So one of the things about Magic is they have sealed drafts, or like draftable boosters, like booster packs that you can, are literally made to be opened up. You don't know what's going to be inside, and pass it along, like Azul was describing, pass to the right, you take a card, whatever, so on and so forth. That's not something you can really do with Pokemon TCG packs, is it, Joe?
No, that's definitely not how they're constructed. We just have way too many species of Pokemon in the first place. So it's even after opening like a booster box, getting a full stage two line, like if you pulled the one holo of a stage two, that's like a whole box just yourself to get that. And that's just not going to be viable for like four packs around the table for each person. So yeah, it's not how these packs are meant to be constructed. It's more of a sort of collectible game, I guess, in that instance. So really, that's why we go to cube. It's because we can curate this card pool instead, whereas packs are just a no-go, really, if you're trying to draft from them.
Yeah, if you just think, pulled out like four booster packs yourself from a box and like had eight other people do the same thing and opened them up, passed around, I doubt any of the eight people would build a playable Pokemon deck.
Do you think we could ever actually get the Pokemon TCG to that? So like obviously sets right now are like what, 170 cards on average or something like that, maybe 150. Mm-hmm. But if we got back to like sub 100 or around 100 cards, and then the cards were actually, that's what it is in like in Magic, like all the cards are built with synergies, right? Even all the bad cards, like all the bad cards have synergies with other bad cards, and that's why you can draft Magic, right? Because the set is built for, the cards are built for drafting. But do you think we could get to that point where with Pokemon, like where we scale back the number of cards in a set for sure, and then also all the bad cards had synergies that worked with other bad cards, and obviously they weren't standard competitive, but you could actually draft Pokemon. Do you think they would ever try and like get it to that point? Because like the collectible side of things wouldn't change, right? You still just print a Charizard, but now it also works in draft, right?
I think the main issue for Pokemon when it comes to that is just the basic rules of the game, or like how the game works with evolving, right? Where like Joe was mentioning, if you open up a whole box, you get one holo stage two. It's like, okay, cool. I've got a 4/4/1 line of this thing I want to play in my cube deck or whatever. Like, you can't, it's just not ever going to really work out like that. Like, if you open up I mean, and maybe it could work out if they like seeded it a little more heavily towards the stage twos, but it would really have to change the way that the booster packs themselves were constructed, as far as giving, like, having there be higher prints of some of these stage twos compared to the basics and stuff like that, I feel like. Or like the non-evolving basics, I guess I should say. I don't know. What are your thoughts there, Joe?
Yeah, basically everything we know about rarity in a pack would have to change. We'd have to start printing like common golems and stuff like that that you just don't really see right now, just to have a stage two that you can like easily access.
Hey, golems had an uncommon before, all right?
Yeah, in fossil, right? Yeah. Right, yeah. But actually, back in Legendary Collection, they had multiples of cards that you can open in packs. So like you would see a pack and you'd open it and it would have like two Poliwags and a Poliwhirl. That's like the closest thing we've ever had. But we've not had anything like that since in booster packs.
Yeah, I was talking with someone about this recently. I couldn't remember exactly what set it was, but I remembered at some point along the way there was like a set that they had built to be more draftable. Mm. Was it? It was Legendary Collection, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So what they would have it just seeded so that if you opened up a pack that you could get part of an evolution line from just one single pack, right?
Yeah, that's basically it. And you would have like very often duplicates of like a common card and like one or two of the uncommon all in the one pack as well. So it would be realistic to actually get evolution lines at least.
It must not have worked out very well because they only did it for one set, I guess, right?
Maybe we were too young for draft back then. That's probably the thing. The wrong target market, but maybe we're there now.
Yeah, I guess V Pokemon would also be like a problem. Like, oh, yeah. would you just have to say that you can't use V Pokemon, but then it's weird when you open one, so...
Give us the Ditto symbol, but with a cube and lots of cards, so it's only allowed in cube format.
I guess it would be cool, like, if they eventually just, like, printed a offset solely for the purpose of drafting. Like, if they literally, like, you had the main sets, and then they were just like, oh, and here's this other set. None of the cards are, like, good enough to be good in standard, but it's a draftable set. Like, that would be something... I would be down to like show up to my local league for like, you know, the draft when a new draft set drops or something like that, and then draft. I don't know, that could be cool. I guess they would have to print like a specific set for it though, I think.
Well, I think Yu-Gi-Oh! I've seen before. They have little box set type decks that you can buy, I think, and build decks based off of what I mean, and we kind of have something similar to that with that they've done more recently with the Build and Battle Stadium kits, where it's just two pre-release kits, which I guess we should mention, that's kind of become Pokemon's drafting, but it's not really drafting because you're not it's sealed, right? So it's a little different. It's just a limited format, which cubing is a limited format in and of itself, right? Where you're building based off of a set card pool, and then based off of the set cards that you open up from various packs or whatever it may be. But I think they've like dipped their toes, like experimented with the idea of releasing limited playable products. But the problem kind of becomes that pre-release, I mean, I have fun playing a pre-release like once, you know, per set. It's like a good little time, but it's, you know, it costs you $20 and, you know, it's just a one-time experience where, and it's just like, there's little reason for me to go back and buy another Build and Battle Stadium, you know? Whereas I think like if they released some sort of really fun draftable, like even if it was like a two-player experience cubing pack, something like that, I could see myself buying it multiple times over, right, to play it again and again with friends. And I think that would be – it's kind of hard to iron out exactly what a product like that would look like is probably part of the issue there, right? And then also making sure that it would be sellable to the mass market because the player base is like a decimal percentage of the people who actually buy Pokemon cards, which is kind of the core problem here.
Yeah, it's such a niche where, yeah, it's a dreamer to get draftable packs really right now.
Definitely. So we've kind of established what cubing looks like, what drafting looks like. You know, the closest thing we have to it in Pokemon right now really is the pre-release kits, but I think cubing as a concept became more of a thing in Magic is kind of where it originated, which once again, you know, kind of Magic being the cornerstone, what things get compared to, they kind of came up with this concept. So A Pokemon TCG cube, most often there is, you know, the cube owner, the cube master, whatever you want to say, the person who has curated this set of cards, usually like 360 to 480, depending on what size Pokemon deck you want to have your players build. And then you try to get eight players together and you organize out the set 360 card pool or 480 card pool into different packs, either three or four packs per player, and then you draft those packs, so on and so forth, around the table. It's kind of the way that that is what effectively cubing is in the Pokemon TCG. So we all obviously did not start playing Pokemon as cubing initially. We all started, imagine, playing whatever the standard format was at the time that we started playing Pokemon. So how did you each transition from, you know, playing standard and whatever competitive format was at the time to initially getting exposed to cubing and then, you know, starting to draft various different players' cubes? We'll start with Joe for this.
So it was actually the first casting gig I did at UK Nationals, and Puka came round, and Puka brought his cube. And literally from the first time I drafted, I drafted like a quite objectively bad deck now that I look at it, because it was the first time I'd ever cubed. It was the first time myself, Freya, David Hockman, like all of us were first beginners, and Puka just strolls in and gives us this cube to try out. And I built a Steelix Prime Magmortar deck at the time, which is objectively quite bad, but they were cards
not
that
much
I, like,
synergy there.
Not much synergy, both really high energy attack costs, like objectively very, very bad deck, but it was so sweet to like play games. I think I won like one or two of my games, but then seeing Puka's deck, it was like clockwork, just railing me completely, and realizing that that's a possibility. Even though we were just picking these cards like here and there, and I had coherent cards, I had like good supporter cards, stuff that stuck out that's useful in every deck, you still kind of get the grasp of that, and that's not going to change. Like the laws of Pokemon are still the same. You still need to have a good amount of basics, good amount of energy, good amount of supporter cards to draw through your deck. That's all there. But seeing this construction in front of me just decimating me and having such great internal synergy was like so eye-opening, and just the draft element itself, where you're trying to weigh up the value of cards here and there, was just so new to me, because I'm not from a Magic background at all. Pokemon's really the only TCG that I've played extensively, especially at that time. So it was just so unlike anything I've ever done. And actually realizing that the drafting part was as fun as the playing part was like a whole other element to me. So a really amazing time. And since then, like, first thing I did when I got home from the tournament was I was looking at articles from like Alex Cook, Kenny Wisdom, a few other ones that are great out there at the time. And yeah, I was hooked. I was trying to go through my old cards, see what I could sort of clobber together and see what could happen. Because yeah, it was such a great experience the first time.
What year was that?
This was 2016.
2016. Okay. I thought for some reason I thought it was going to be older than that, because you said Steelix Prime. So I was like, how old are people? So is now I'm actually curious, like, is Puka's cube the first cube in Pokemon? Is that?
I don't. It's probably among the first, but I'm not sure if it's like actually the first. It's definitely one of the earlier ones. He was an early adopter to it for sure.
Yeah.
There were already articles out about it though, so I think there was a small contingent. I imagine it would have been people who were already involved in Magic or at least knew about it that were trying to bring it over. And I'm sure some of those early cubes have changed in like ratios, and there must have been a trial and error period for a long time. But I think we're getting it down to an exact science these days.
Yeah, from what I've read, I think before cubing in Magic kind of popped up around that 2010-11 mark. I don't remember exactly, so I don't want to say definitively because I don't remember exactly, but I would say like probably anyone who is building a cube around 2014-15 is probably a very early adopter there. And you mentioned a couple of articles, ones that I've read before whenever I initially got interested in cubing as well, Alex Cook and Kenny Wisdom. Alex's is over on Pokebeach, I believe, and then Kenny's, I think, is on Six Prizes.
That's right.
And those are great reference points, and I would recommend anyone who's interested in cubing. I mean, some of the information would probably be slightly outdated. Like, more people have kind of come up with different ways to do cubes, I think, since those were written back in 2016 timeframe. But they are both still great reference points for like just what exactly cubing is. So I'd encourage anyone to read into either of those. Azul, yourself, what kind of, how did you get, when do you remember cubing for the first time?
I think it was my the first time I cubed might have been Puka's Cube. There's a couple that I remember. It was either, yeah, I think it might have been Puka's Cube. I don't remember what year it was. It was a while ago now. COVID always like throws me off. Like I always forget to add like 2 years.
The last 2 years are just kind of like a blank space in your life.
Yeah, I'm always about to be like, it was like 3 years ago. I was like, okay, so no, it was like 5 years ago. So it was like probably 5-6 years ago. I don't even remember at this point. But I think it might have been Puka's Cube was the first cube that I played. It was Puka's Cube or Michael Slutsky's Cube. The other one I remember playing very early on was also Jason Klasinski's base set cube. I played that once way back when as well. So it was one of those three cubes was my first cube, but I'm pretty sure it was Puka's Cube was the first cube that I played as well. And yeah, I mean, it was just like such a different way to play the game. And obviously I love playing the game, the Pokemon TCG. So just like more different ways to play it. It almost makes you kind of wish it was competitive. Like in some form, but I don't think we'll ever get to that point. Obviously competitive as far as like actually part of like the circuit. Sure. I don't think we'll ever get to that point, but I think there's a lot of things that are more enjoyable than expanded. So if they're gonna keep expanded around, who knows, maybe one day you get something like that involved. But no, it's a different way to play the game. And like Joe said too, like you really, the biggest thing for me too was like realizing how important drafting was. And like how in depth it is too, like that, as long as you know the cube, right? As long as you know the 360, 400 cards, you know, or roughly, you know, so you can know what to expect or other cards to kind of look out for to synergize with the cards you have, or just know that you need to look for some kind of powerful draw support or Pokemon search. And you're like, well, I know these exist in the cube. I got to try and hold out for some of those or look for some of those, or be like, you know, take this early and maybe you'll find if you find the evolution pieces later, it'll be good. But if not, it's not the end of the world, but have that as an option. Like, yeah, the drafting part is just like so different. And it's just so unique to what I knew at that point, having just played, you know, standard and expanded. So, yeah, I mean, that's always like half the point of cubing is drafting. The other part is playing your deck and seeing what else other people came up with and what cool combos they came up with, especially with cubes. Like Puka's or yours, Chip, where it's like there's so much going on. There's so many like little things, like one of things that you can like piece together to do these cool combos. So, but yeah. Ever since then, I've always been like a big fan of it, and always looking to cube at the major tournaments that I go to when I get a chance and can find a cube master with a cube.
A cube.
I wonder
master.
If that's going to become the term after this, cube master.
I definitely did not make that. I have heard people say that.
I've never heard that before.
I mean, it's kind of like the you know, master of like a D&D campaign or whatever, like the,
yeah,
you know, it's honestly kind of similar, right? Because that person is spent the time and curated the pool of cards, adjusted them accordingly to try to match the power level to make sure it's fair and fun and that there's cool interactions and stuff that work out. But yeah, I think my first experience cubing was actually at the World Championships in 2018. So I've been cubing far less time than the two of you guys. But it was also our friend Michael Slutsky's cube, Azul. I remember doing it. And he has kind of a weird rule set, which we'll talk about when we talk about the different types of cubes. But yeah, I remember just having an absolute blast. After we were done, I immediately wanted to draft again and do it all over again. The main issue with cubing and kind of where every person who owns a cube, myself and Joe, I'm sure agreeing with this, the main issue with owning a cube is finding 8 people who want to do it. You know, it's a big commitment. It takes a few hours and you need people to either come together or all be together at an event. And you'll hear if you're, you know, maybe a little unfamiliar with cubing, but you're, you know, involved in the Pokemon community, you've surely seen people talking about cubing at regionals, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that. That's kind of like a classic Sunday evening activity. My kind of issue this past year, you know, because this was the first, I built my cube over kind of the COVID era and had played it with some local friends a few times during last summer. But when it came to like bringing it to events, this year was the first time I brought a cube to events, and I worked all of the regionals I was at. I casted every single regionals and internationals I went to. So I would bring my cube along and I was ready to cube Friday night. but my friends are all trying to figure out what deck they're playing for the tournament. So nobody wanted to cube with me. And then it came to be Sunday, and we would always end up cubing Sunday, but it was always like, you know, I've been working all weekend. It was just a long time. You know, we always still ended up doing it, but it's like, man, we could have been doing this every single night this week, but it didn't quite work out to that extent. But yeah, cubing ever since I did that with Michael the first time in 2018, was always trying to draft again and again. And I've done many different people's cubes over the last few years. There's tons of different ways that people have built cubes. And that's something I love about cubing, is that everyone's cube is unique. Everyone, the person who's curated it, has done something different from the other people who have built cubes before them. There's tons of different ways you can play it. And something that's is also kind of interesting to me is it feels like cubing has become more popular in the last 2 years, when there hasn't been events for people to go and cube at, because of being able to cube online. And that's kind of become a really popular thing to do. And I know, Joe, you've participated in plenty of online cubes. So why don't you talk to us about what exactly playing a Pokemon TCG cube online looks like, and how people go about doing that?
Well, sure. So there's a fantastic website called cubekoga.net, which is probably the best place to look at all of these online cubes. But essentially, there's a Discord group similar to like when we were having the sort of grassroots sort of COVID events almost, where we arrange our own games. They're actually played on Play Limitless now as well. But essentially, due to like trying to get schedules to work together, it's like one draft over the course of like 6 weeks, where you have the draft itself on a certain time, and then as you get around by round, you have like a week to arrange your match and play against the person. So it's been going for a couple of years now, I think, actually, and it means we've been able to cycle through a number of players' cubes. All of these people adore Cube itself, and there's a ton of people who have joined the Discord, learned a lot about Cube, and now they're some of the best drafters and players you can see out there. And it's a great chance for people to look at all sorts of eras of the game. Oftentimes you'll see cubes based on certain blocks or time frames in the TCG as well. That's a very common way to enjoy cube. And it's basically just another way to get involved in a tournament setting. And for this Discord specifically, over, I think it's every 6 months or so, every like four or so cubes will accumulate points for people who made like top 8, top 4 and whatnot. And then they have one champion's cube, which is a cube of like the group's choosing. And we then all have one weekend where we draft and play all across that weekend. So the three champs cubes we've had, I've got second and two top fours. So I'm still chasing that win, unfortunately.
I should have added those to your accolades at the beginning of the cast.
It's a really good time. The time I got second, my cube was my deck was absolutely busted. I absolutely high rolled like Claydol and double Garchomp. Like, my deck was insane. But yeah, the other two times it was a bit harder work. But yeah, that's essentially the Cube League. And if you are someone who already enjoys Cube, or if you're someone that wants to learn Cube, they have not only these like monthly things rolling, they have like a team cube and lots of other like side events, and they have pop-up cubes. Like, most weekends there'll be someone running one. So if you're just casual and want to sort of dip your toe into it and not be intimidated by like having to build one yourself, you can just pop into that Discord and just trying to get one going.
So obviously you can't cube like on PTCGO, right? So where do people go to actually play the game?
So the draft is done on like a Google Sheets document where it's like the pictures of the cards of the person's cube, and you just select one as you go, basically, which is pretty easy for anyone. And then usually the games are played either on Untap or on Tabletop Sim. So those are probably the two best and most common ways. Really, it depends on who you're up against, like in the rounds, because essentially once the draft is done, you can just talk to whoever you're up against that round and see what they want to do, if it's their favorite way. Even in some eras, if you have all the cards, you can do it on PTCGO, for example, if it's [S2] Sure. [S1] Like a regular evolution, there's nothing wrong with it. So it's however you guys can like negotiate it, because it is still a casual format at the end of the day.
Definitely. I don't think I realized that you guys did the drafting itself on like a Google Sheet. That's really cool.
That's right. Yeah. It's a really easy way of doing it. And you can export it immediately from Cube Koga as well. So if you have friends that want to play online as well, you could just export anyone's cube from this website and just do that Google Sheets draft as well, and just play within the week or whenever you guys want.
So now, no, go ahead, Azul.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that there was that much extensive online cubing going on. I'm not gonna lie, I hate online cubing. I hate tabletop sim. I hate Untap. I can't, like, I cannot, like, stay focused when doing either of those. So I've done it a couple times to try it out, like when Tabletop Simulator first kind of blew up as being a thing in the Pokemon community, like at the beginning of COVID. I was like, oh, this is a new way to test the new sets and you can cube and all this stuff. I was like, all right, I'll get Tabletop Sim. And then I tried it out. I was like, my attention span just can't, I can't handle that. Yeah, I need something a little bit flashier. PTCGO just barely, you know, ticks that box of like being interactive enough. But of course, I love cubing IRL for sure.
Yeah, I've done a couple of online cubes and it is fun, but it's definitely held up by like the people you're playing with slash like the cubing experience itself. Fighting with Tabletop Simulator is not the most fun thing in the world. Cubing at its core is meant to be enjoyed with a group of people IRL at a local league, at a regionals, whatever it may be. It is definitely way more fun to do in person than online. It's kind of just like, you know, online was the only way to actually make it happen for the last couple of years for many people. But so let's go ahead and move on from this section and now talk about different types of cubes. And I've got Cube Koga pulled up here, a website that Joe mentioned. Definitely something to reference and look at if you're looking to build a cube. Everyone, most people who build cubes have their cube list on this website, and there's tons of different ones you can build. Joe himself has a few on this site. A Pokemon Trader would be his name. You can see, oh wow, I didn't realize you had this many, what, 6 cubes here on the site to build off of, to look at. So plenty to look at there. Andrew Mahone, who we had on a couple weeks, who I'm sure many people are big fans of, he's got a couple cubes listed on here. Puka, who we've mentioned a few times and who many people will recognize, kind of like one of the godfathers of the Pokemon TCG, one of the best Pokemon players, now works at the Pokemon company. He has several different cubes, or he has his Chaos Cube listed on here, which has become my favorite personal way to cube. It's actually very similar to the cube that I have built myself, because it is one of my favorite ways to draft. I've done many different cubes. It's definitely become one of my favorites, though. So yeah, let's, speaking of different types of cubes, yeah, we'll talk now about the different types. And I think one of the main ways that people try to make up for the fact that it is difficult to draft the Pokemon TCG is to just introduce mutant evolution. And that's actually, if we look at Cube Koga, the most popular cube on Cube Koga is a mutant cube. So why don't you tell us, Joe, what exactly mutant is and how it works?
So mutant evolution is when you basically ignore how a traditional Pokemon evolves. So it's not just Bellsprout into Weeping Bell into Victreebel. It can be like a Shaymin into a Weeping Bell into a Venusaur. So it can be based on colors, essentially. And that's what makes it much more in line with Magic, where you just have to draft colors, essentially. And even you can have cross synergies within colors, of course, as well. But basically, all this does is it opens up, it really massively expands your card pool of like interesting stuff that you use. Because as soon as you hone into one like evolution line, you can only ever then pick like the basics of that guy in regular evolution. So if you think there are really cool Yanmegas, for example, you only can have Yanmas in your cube. But Mutant completely breaks that rule, and now you can have awesome like Call for Family attacks or random abilities or poker powers or this, that, and the other. Of all different eras from Pokemon. So essentially, you're just really extending your card pool way out to everything that's ever been printed in that color, basically. So you are changing the rules quite a bit, and it takes a long time to balance a mutant cube because there's so much versatility and variety that you may not expect things to have random synergies between them as well. So it's a really delicate balance to actually get a mutant right, I think. And that's why you see one of the top ones in Cube Koga. That's been going on for like 5 years, I think, that cube's been running, and they've been adapting it this whole time. So It's a very difficult cube to like balance. But once you get that balance, there's amazing replayability with Mutant Evolution because there's just so much variety of what's going on. There's so many different interesting and cool abilities throughout the years of the TCG. So it just is a fantastic way to play the game. Some people are frustrated by this at times, of course, because it's also very difficult from a gameplay standpoint to play around like all of this random stuff. So your opening turns in the game, you like see a random, I don't know, like a Mew, and you realize it could evolve into something that draws cards, could be attacking you turn two for this, that, and the other. So like the opening two or three rounds of Mutant Draft, you have to play like a real pansy and just like, if you're a player two or whatever, you just have to attach to the bench and hope they don't kill your guy in the active and do all this other stuff. You basically really have to have some bounce back here and there because people can pop off with the amount of like combos and synergy they can have. So definitely a different feeling to a regular evolution, but there are definitely benefits to it as well.
So yeah, just to recap, like for a mutant cube, any basic of a type can evolve into any stage one of that type, which can in turn evolve into any stage two of that type. So you really never know what's coming.
Yeah. Right. Are mutant cubes generally singleton, or are they generally... They're much more often singleton. That's what I was curious about. I mean, it doesn't really matter. You could just put all the cool cards of a type in the cube, right? But
kind of the idea, yeah.
I think just, that
like there's so much more history in the TCG when you allow every basic, every stage one, every stage two, right? So you're going to find naturally cool stuff.
And I think that Mutant, that was kind of like one of the initial ways that it feels like people responded to the problem with drafting Pokemon, where like evolving is an issue. So if you just make it so that anything can evolve into anything within its own typing, it makes it much more, I think Mutant is one of the most easy ways to draft as far as like, you know, at its, I'm sure the high level mutant cubes, right? You know, there's a lot more intricacies, but like just at its core, it makes it much easier to draft because there's less emphasis on like getting those specific evolution lines and more emphasis on just getting a specific color, like you mentioned, Joe. It's funny you mentioned, Joe, like disliking that kind of aspect of Mutant Cube. And that's kind of always been my problem with it. I do enjoy it. And it is a lot of fun to build a mutant deck. It's a lot of fun to be like, yeah, I can do this crazy thing with my Mew that evolves into, you know, which is obviously a Pokemon that's going to be powerful on its own, never meant to evolve, but it will evolve into something, like you said, that can draw cards, which can now evolve into something that can attack, so on and so forth. That is like super fun to be the player doing it, but it is not as fun to sit across the table and watch your opponent's support Pokemon turn into something that can just nuke whatever you've been trying to set up out of nowhere. It's very difficult in a mutant cube when it comes to actually playing to prepare for what your opponent may or may not do on their next turn. Have you ever done a mutant draft, Azul?
I don't think so, actually. I'm trying to think, like, if... I don't think any of the Puka's cubes that I've ever played have ever been mutant. That's the only one I can think about that I would have ever played that was mutant. So I don't think I've ever played a mutant cube. I think I've drafted, like, way back in the day, like, I've drafted, you know, at pre-releases, you would be able to do drafts of the of packs. I think maybe back then... they allowed you to do mutant, like the TO would be like, you can do, like they would either let you do mutant or not do mutant. I think that's the only time I've maybe ever drafted and played mutant before, but I can't think of any cubes where I've played a mutant cube before.
What are your kind of personal feelings on mutant cubing, Joe?
So one of my best friends, actually, Tamao, has a stage one only mutant, so you can only go up to stage one evolution Pokemon, and it's a fantastic time. Again, that's been balanced over a number of years now, and it's great. And I think specifically towards this cube, because there's a lot of stage ones, there's a lot of like one and two energy attachment attackers, so you get that back and forth naturally that you don't necessarily get sometimes with like stage twos, where the person who's just gone first has such an inherent advantage because they get a big stage two that has like way too much hit points to deal with like in one hit KO, and they've got one attachment ahead of you. Like the advantage is just too high sometimes with stage twos if they're like the line toppers are just usually the best and most interesting cards in mutant evolution. So sometimes you just get railed for like two or three knockouts just by this one stage two that got evolved quicker than you could.
Right.
But in a stage one issue, that's like much less of a problem. And I also think another way you could try and combat it is by having more stringent turn one rules, right? Going back to other eras of the TCG when you can, you know, not play item cards, for example, or not play this, that, and the other to try and make player one have a way less explosive like opportunity to just pop off on you. So hopefully you can make comebacks or just have lots of setup attacking Pokemon in the opening stages. So player two can use a call for family attack like almost every time. So then you're at least getting into the game or something like that. So there's a lot you can do to try and balance it. And I think a lot of people are putting time into mutant cubes because it is worth it, I think. But I do really enjoy the experience, and it's a very different feeling. I feel like a lot of times people can be pigeonholed when you're in regular evolution, and you kind of see the coolest or best stage two of a certain color, and you're like, well, I guess I'm the Blaziken guy this draft, and you just sort of you just go for that stuff, and you just see red, pick red, basically. And it's a lot more fluid when you're playing Mutant, when sure. you can have like three or four different colors just because stuff is good, basically.
You've talked a couple times about balancing, and I think that's something that any person who owns a cube, they're always kind of making changes and adjusting things. You want to just talk about a little bit like what exactly balancing means and what that may look like for someone who's building a cube?
Sure. So obviously Pokemon have different attacks and hit points and all this other stuff, and everything is relevant. So everything down to hit points or retreat cost, attack cost, these are all things you need to think about when you're trying to balance types against one another, because there's no point in just building a lightning line, a water line, a fire line, if the grass line is going to win every time because it just has 20 more hit points than everything else, or does 20 more damage than everything else naturally, or even just having free retreat can completely have a cube out of whack. I remember having a Garchomp line in my cube at one stage. It's since come back in as I've slowly raised the power level of other lines. But the first time I drafted it, we played over a weekend with my group of friends, and both times it won and went XO. Like both the two different people who drafted it, even in the second day, I think two different people pieced apart the Garchomp line and they both came like first and second. So it was just like clearly evident that those cards were more powerful than the other ones. They just had more flexibility and retreat cost, or were able to do sniping as well as direct damage to the face. They were just like just stronger cards, basically, and monitoring those are going to be important. And I think also equally as important, not just keeping an eye on the things that often are doing well, the cards that often are drafted late, or often cards that are drafted but not eventually making it into people's 60 card decks, because you have to think of it almost, even though you've got like 480 cards or whatever, you have to think of it like building a deck of Pokemon cards, because you want everything to be as interesting as possible, really. You don't want people to have easy decisions. You want to make it as difficult as possible for everyone the entire time to make it challenging, but also give people options to do stuff. There's no point in having dead weight in your draft. So you want things to be close on power level, but not completely, you know, if anything goes over the edge, you have to be able to scale things back when need be. And you can only really do that outside of just looking at the cards themselves and sort of balancing. You can see the right numbers of hit points, the right damage stuff you can do and whatnot. It's really just testing out the cube. And don't feel ashamed if, you know, your first couple tries, someone just obliterates everyone with like a certain line or whatever. That's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to experiment here and there. And it's basically a constant changing thing, a cube. You may have played someone's cube a year ago and it may have completely different lines, or it may have even synergy cards. Like, I remember having Blacksmith in my cube for a long time, and simply because I had like Blacksmith, Sinlin, Lusamine, VS Seeker, Palpad, the fire guy could get like 10 more energies into play than anyone else. So it was just like way too good. So it's not even the Pokemon themselves always that's the problem. Sometimes it's like synergistic cards that you also have to be monitoring as well.
But look for the happy medium, right? Nothing too bad, but nothing also nothing too good, but still a little bit of some stuff being better than others.
And there's always going to be kind of like a cube meta, right? Like there's always going to be this archetype within a cube is going to be one of the stronger archetypes, but it's just about making it, you know, it'll still be strong, but balancing it out to where like, okay, even like the fourth or fifth best cube archetype can stand up to it, right?
Yeah, for sure. And sometimes even if you get a group that are drafting a cube a lot of times, that meta will actually change the strength of that line anyway, because if everyone knows that like water's really strong, you'll have more competition for that line, so people like pick apart at it sometimes. So if it's like a less complete line, it can go down to the level of other things as well. So that's like if you're cubing with the same people and over again, little micrometers happen naturally as well within your cube, I would
definitely
say.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And that's a huge part of it is like if you cube with the same eight people, you know, five times, like you people have their favorites, right? It's like, I remember using this card. It was a lot of fun. I'm going to try to draft it every single time. Or, you know, you have a tendency to recognize when someone is likely to pass a certain type of card. And if you're sitting next to this person, it's like, okay, I'm more likely to get, you know, this maybe is more likely to come back to me if they saw it again or something like that, right? So all those little metas develop within themselves. I personally think like the most fun, like it's a lot of fun to draft with the same group over and over again because that kind of becomes competitive and I enjoy that level of competition. But I think like one of the most fun drafts is usually like a couple of people who know that specific cube really well, a couple of people who know cubing in general pretty well and like are good cubers, and then a couple of people who it's like their first or second, maybe third time cubing as well, because it just makes for the most variety, the most interesting interactions. And it something I have come to enjoy as like owning a cube now, as opposed to just being the person playing a cube, is watching people play my cube for the first time and like hopefully watch them enjoy themselves and have a good time and want to, just like I did when I first drafted Michael's cube at Worlds in 2018, hopefully want to jump right back in and draft again as soon as it's all over and ready to run it back once more.
Sure. And sometimes getting fresh pairs of eyes of it can unlock parts of the cube you didn't know were possible. I remember one of my friends who had only been playing for like a year and a half, never played cube before, and only ever played Volcanion EX. So I thought they were going to be like kind of mediocre at what they were doing, but they actually like, they kind of like obliterated my cube and was able to do a once per turn trump card loop with like this deck, and was doing like every turn they were devolving stuff. They were like hitting for 18 confusion, which didn't sound that insane, but then you have to remember they could cycle max potion every turn and do this, that, and the other. So they like drafted something I completely was never even on my radar.
Exposed an issue in the card pool.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to make tweaks after that, and I was flabbergasted and just like so ecstatic to see that happening, even though the cube was like kind of broken in a way. It was amazing to see that deck come together from a source that I was really not expecting.
One of my favorite things in cubing is like, because like, you know, doing a bunch of other people's cubes and stuff, you'll kind of bring your perspective from other cubes that you've done, and that can affect the way that you draft someone else's cube, which is going to have a totally different card pool than the thing you normally draft. One of the most fun things is after the cube is over, and if you've like gone undefeated or, you know, won the majority of your games, for the person who made the cube to kind of come over and be like, okay, maybe this needs to change because this is a little too good the way you've built it together. So breaking someone's cube is definitely
a great compliment. Yes,
certainly. So we talked about Mutant a little bit. Traditional evolutions is definitely still a pretty common way for people to build cubes. And it's not as simple as I think putting like a 4-4-4 line of a stage two into a drafting pool. Usually we see a little bit more of like a pyramid evolution line, which I think would be kind of the normal way to play it, of like a common Pokemon would be Gardevoir, for example, because there's been a lot of great Gardevoir cards over the years. So people will maybe have seven Ralts in their cube and then five Kirlias and then three or four really good Gardevoirs or Gallades potentially mixed in there. So you could theoretically see a couple of people playing Gardevoir in their cube, but you could also have someone who just built a really strong Gardevoir-focused deck.
Yeah, I really like those counts because it allows the players around the table to speculate on things and not get like super punished for trying to keep their lines open, because that's one of my biggest pet peeves, is just like lines are too thin or whatever and people are completely forced down an avenue as soon as they get like the first stage two of something. They have to commit to it because they just don't have enough picks yet to do anything else. So giving people the chance to get these like crappy cards at the end where it's just like little basics that do whatever, it can sometimes keep the back door open for you to pivot later down the line based on what you can see. So those lines really are tried and trusted, I think, for regular evolution. And if you do want to have just like a 4-4-4 block, that's okay. But it essentially means that every basic is as valuable as the stage two, which is just such a strange intuition, I think, that people won't naturally have. And it also means that you basically just have to ignore trainers and supporters unless they're very, very high quality, just to even get a functioning line. So I really like having like too many basics in stage ones, if you want to think about it that way, because if people want to speculate, you're not going to completely lose out or whatever, and you can have people competing and still create functioning decks, even if it is like a 2-2-2 line or something like that.
Right. And then within that, you could also, you know, since, like I mentioned, Gardevoir, just as an example, there's been so many Gardevoirs that are great over the years. Each one of the four or five Gardevoirs you have in your cube can be different. Mm-hmm. You can also, of course, have like them be all the same. Like if you're building in a specific era, maybe you'll have like two of this one and three of this other one that's been really good. Something like that. So there's definitely a difference there between like having multiple of the same card and then a, more of a singleton draft, where within the traditional line, each one of those seven Ralts will be different, or each one of those five Curlia will be different, right?
Yeah, it should be, I think it's definitely a bigger impact for the line toppers rather than like the little basics. Sure. But yeah, it depends what you want to do, really. And again, balancing comes into its own here. If you feel like there aren't four or five of like that species that you want to have that are in balance, sometimes just having two of one that you think is like in the middle or whatever is probably the best way to go. I feel like when cubing first started, I saw singleton being like the way to go, and I think more often than not I see an easy balance is having second copies of this, that, or the other. Or if you want to give archetypes certain identities, you put that second copy of a card in that you want, just to really like hammer home that's what they're going for. Like the cube builders trying to push people down certain avenues sometimes with their line toppers, and it can be shown by what's available.
Sure.
Yeah. And then that is and singleton, I feel like, is that's like the next thing to talk about is like singleton. It's more of like a like mutant and traditional evolution is like what you is more what your cube is built around, and then singleton is kind of like a choice of like a rule. And there's two different ways to do singleton, right? You can either do you can play one of seven different like if your cube is singleton, and let's take the Gardevoir line for example, you could have one of seven different Ralts, one of four different Curliers, and then one of three different Gardevoirs, or you could or your cube could be based around like true singleton, right, where it's only one Ralt, only one Curlia, only one Gardevoir. And that's what your cube is like, Chip. Like yours and Puka's are both true singleton, where the card is called Ralts, you can't, there's not more than one in the cube. But what do you guys think about singleton versus non-singleton? Because like most of the cubes I've played, I guess besides Slutsky's, have been singleton cubes, I think. So I haven't played a mm-hmm. ton of non-singleton cubes, I don't think. I've mostly played singleton cubes. But how would you compare singleton to like true singleton, where it's like one of each card versus, you know, a 7-4-3 line of Gardevoir versus cubes that have a 1-1-1 line of Gardevoir? Like what do you prefer, and what do you think like are, do you think they're both just different, or what do you think, Joe?
Well, Puka's cube definitely gives me heart palpitations the entire time, and a brain aneurysm, because it then becomes a memory game, basically. A lot like that's a big part of a pure singleton of everything, because you literally are throwing away your picks if you're taking a card that you eventually can't build around because a piece has already gone previously on whatever. And obviously that can still happen where people priority pick certain cards and things don't come together. So you have to be ready for some heartbreak, I think. And that's just another element, really, that comes from the draft. And I think that's probably the most exhilarating drafting experience you can have, certainly. But the deck's power levels are naturally not like super high. They're normally like relatively consistent, but things can go wrong very quickly for you when you have 1-1-1 lines, because if someone just like quickly knocks out your basic of your stage two, then it's like, got to wait until I draw the one super rod that I drafted until I can actually try and get my strategy online. So it has a very different feeling to like traditional games of Pokemon, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I also like going to like the traditional Evos and Mutants, I enjoy singleton and those type of cubes because there's so many different cards over the years that you just get to feature the best. It's kind of like a best of, or like a highlights of, and it depends once again on the person who's curated the cube, whoever has kind of assembled things, like which ones they enjoy the most. Like you can always kind of tell whenever you're playing someone's cube what era of the game they enjoy the most, because they've either built the cube specifically around that era, or if they're using an unlimited card pool, they have most of the cards are from like a specific era, right? So like, yeah, traditional Evos, like even if it's something like a Butterfree, right? Or if you've got five different Butterfrees to potentially choose from, there's different ones, or some of those Butterfrees will be more powerful than the other ones. Some of them will maybe just not even be that good, but you would still play them because you drafted into it. You got it as a late pick, whatever. and it like can synergize with your deck. Now, when it comes to the Chaos Cube, what you've mentioned, which is Puka's cube concept, kind of something that he originally came up with, because Singleton has been a popular way to play cubes for a long time, but Puka, to my knowledge, I think is the first person who said, okay, what if there was truly only one of each of the Pokemon? So as opposed to there being seven different Ralts, seven different Curly, or five different Curlia, four different Gardevoir, it's just a 1-1-1. And that's, as you can see here on Cube Koga, it is one of the more popular cubes, and it's one that my cube is very similar to this that I've built. And it is a lot of fun, and it definitely puts the highest emphasis on the drafting process, like Joe mentioned. It is the most exhilarating drafting experience, where it's like you remember that you've seen this piece in this pack that you opened up. It's like, I gotta hope it wheels. And when it comes back around the table and you see it in that three or four card pack, there is no greater feeling than seeing that card come back to you. But something you actually mentioned a little bit earlier, Joe, which I would say is maybe one of the potential problems with the Chaos Cube when it comes to drafting trainer cards, with the exception of like probably 20 or 30 top tier, top level, really powerful trainer cards, most of the time you just kind of take whatever you get at the end of the draft when it comes to, like, it's very common that you're just going to have Howe or Tierno or, you know, just kind of these Janine, like just these mediocre supporters are just going to be cards that you play in your cube because they kind of came back around to you, because not only is the Pokemon a singleton part, but the trainers themselves are all singleton and there's only one of each of those. And I think that's something like in traditional cubes, a lot of times people will have singleton of the Pokemon, but they'll still have like eight rare candies in the cube, right? So people can still get their stage twos out a little quicker, or they'll still have, you know, six or seven ends in the cube, or, you know, a bunch of quick balls, ultra balls, whatever it may be. So there's, it's that you can do singleton with just the Pokemon and then like keep to a more consistent trainer count. But then I think kind of a downside of doing that is that the trainers almost become less valuable because you know you're going to have a decent chance to get into them later on. So it's kind of like just, again, that balancing game of what exactly you're trying to accomplish and where you're hoping to end up with things. So, and then we have one more type of cube to talk about, of like a specific type, because we've mentioned Michael Slutsky's cube a few times, the one that Azul and I did. And this is another, he's actually, I think, one of the only people I know that does this. But in both of these, the articles I mentioned earlier, I think I remember at least in Kenny's writing about it, is the Darwin rule of evolutions when it comes to cubing. So you just draft the final evolution of whatever line it is. So if you want to play Blaziken, you get a Blaziken. You just have to worry about drafting the Blaziken. And then at the end of the draft, when it comes time to actually build your deck, set aside in a different box will be the one Torchic and one Combusken that you get to add to your deck. So that is another way that people have in the past tried to get around the difficulty of drafting Pokemon when it comes to evolving, is just like, you don't have to worry about drafting the little guys, just draft your big main attacker. And then at the end of the cube, you get an opportunity to still, you know, get your full evolution line. And I would say that that is probably also a great beginner way to play a cube, because it makes it much, I would say it has maybe a lower emphasis on drafting compared to like the singletons, where you have to draft all of the pieces. And it's still a lot of fun. I do it, like, just cubing in general, I always love doing people's cubes because people can come up with so many different ways to do it. I will say, though, as I have cubed more and more, the Darwin rule has kind of fallen a little bit farther down on the ways I enjoy doing cubes, though.
I kind of agree with that as well. The Darwin, it definitely is like, it feels like a more chill cube because you don't have to worry as much about drafting. And yeah, I think like for someone's like first draft, it would be, that's like a good way to kind of do it. And it does definitely feel like it feels like when you play games, like when I play games with Slutsky's cube, you're more playing something closer to like a standard format. But like that's kind of not the point of cubing, but you're definitely trying to get to that stage where it feels, you know, like you're playing a different format. Yeah. So I definitely prefer the singletons and the mutant evolutions and the, you know, having to draft all your Pokemon, because then it also does put more emphasis, because in that kind of cube, There's more emphasis like on the trainer cards a little bit, because like you just get, draft your Dawn fans, and then you can get your four collectors or four researchers or whatever and play like all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think Slutsky's is the only cube I've ever played that has done the Darwin rule before. Joe, have you ever ran into someone else's cube that operates like that?
No, I haven't. It's something that I'd consider. And I think as a practicality standpoint, it would really speed up the draft itself. Mm-hmm. So if you are like after a tournament and you only have like 2 hours, the draft would probably only be like 20 minutes or so, right? So after deck construction, you can easily get like 3 or 4 rounds done before you've got to go home. So definitely a practicality aspect to bear in mind with that as well. That's a big positive, I would say.
Yeah, I think he does do 60 card decks, so the draft itself is a bit bigger. I don't remember exactly how many. I guess it would be what, 6 packs, 5 packs, or 6 packs, something like that. And that is another thing we haven't really talked about yet, is that different cubes will, at the end of everything, after it's all said and done, you take an opportunity to actually, like, when it comes time to like sit down and build your deck, depending on the size of how many packs you drafted and stuff like that, depending on how many cards you're left with in your final pick to finally build your deck from, usually like at the beginning, the you'll have set out, you're either going to be building a 40 card deck, a 50 card deck, or a 60 card deck. The cube that, Puka's cube, that is the one that I use, we build 50 card decks. Michael's, you still build 60 card decks. And then Joe, isn't your four prize, or your big basics cube that I did at EUIC, it's a 6 prize, right, as well?
Yep.
So you've, I imagine, have done plenty of cubes that have all these different variations as far as deck size versus how many prizes you set out, because in Pokemon, mm-hmm. whenever you're doing a limited format like this, the amount of prizes you set out is dependent on the size of your deck. So you'll see this at pre-releases where you're building 40 card decks, you set out 4 prize cards. If you're building a 50 card deck, you set out 5 prizes, so on and so forth. Do you have a preference when it comes to, I think like building 40 card decks, the draft itself is usually going to go faster, and the games themselves are also going to go faster because there's less knockouts that have to take place. 60 cards, I think it can go a little too long because it's depending on your power level. Like if you've got 2 prizers in your cube, I know Xander Perot, he has a Sun and Moon era cube that I've done before that has GXs and stuff like that in it. And so that makes things go a little bit quicker because you're taking 2 prize KOs. But I don't really do that many cubes usually that have that, you know, it's usually focused around like single prizers. It feels like for me, 50 cards has kind of become the sweet spot of, you know, the amount of time spent drafting and the games feeling not quite as grindy. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I kind of like the intuitive aspect of a 60 card deck just because you sort of know those elements much more often. But typically the ratios that you'd see in like trainers and energy and stuff are all off regardless. So it's not necessarily a big deal to go down counts or whatever. And yeah, like you say, practicality, getting games done, 50 cards sounds pretty solid. Still a lot of back and forth can happen. A lot of comeback is possible with 5 prizes, especially when you're in a 1 prize format. So I feel like 50, 60 are kind of my favorites. The 4 prize thing, I just feel too worried that an explosive start is just like unsurmountable at that point because there's not enough prize cards to sort of recover or to sponge hits or whatever. So I kind of like 5 and 6 personally, but it's all down to preference really. And the speed of a cube could make a 4 prize cube like completely fine as well if it's everything's like 3 or 4 energy attack costs.
Yeah, I think for anyone out there who's like going to go build their cube, definitely like keep an open mind to that, because it does kind of come down to the power level of the cube, right? Because if you have 2 prizers or if your things are 1-hit KOing stuff on turn 2, based on kind of like Chip said previously, like the era that you kind of build your deck around, then yeah, if you're getting 1-hit KOs on turn 2, then 6 prize cards, even if it's 2 prize Pokemon in the cube, could still be correct, right? And then obviously, if you're going to go up to 60 card decks, you do have to beef up the card pool, right? You have to play just a bigger card pool for the people to draft with. And then I think we've like mentioned every time that like 8 people is generally what cubes are built around, but of course like there's flexibility in that as well. Like one thing we're going to talk about here in a bit is like 2-player cubes, which is something that people do. I haven't seen anyone have like a 4-player cube ever. I think I've seen 8 players and 2 players, but like you could build a cube for 4 people, right? Like there's nothing, you can be as creative as you want. You don't have to follow like any, there's no guidelines, strict guidelines you have to follow for building cubes. So anyone out there who's like going to build their first cube, 20 card decks, 10 card decks, 60 card decks.
I don't know about a 10 card deck, bro.
It would get interesting.
I mean, yeah, sure.
Fast games.
One prize.
And then, yeah, like as many players, like you can build it for, like, you know, a certain number of players as well. Yeah, I've never seen someone do. Maybe four player cubes are the way, though. If it's so hard to get eight people every time, four players might be the new eight player.
Yeah, I think that I have a two-player cube that's a bit of fun. It's just kind of like a budget cube experience, right? Because that is the main issue with cubing, is getting the full eight people together. But I've drafted plenty of times with six people, and actually one of Joe's cubes is a four-player cube with the okay. Big basics, no bricks. So, yeah, and that's kind of something that you think about when you're building the cube itself, is like, how many players do I want this cube to be built for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's always on your mind. You have to think about, you know, how are people actually going to play this thing? Like, I have a few cubes now, so my traditional evolution is an eight player. It's a long draft. I basically oftentimes don't even bring it to tournaments unless they're in the UK, because it's too big in the bag and you don't want to get extra luggage, and it takes a whole weekend basically to do the whole thing. But the all basics no bricks cube that I crafted is a four player draft, and you can probably get done drafting in about half an hour, I would say. Mm-hmm. The gameplay is very, very long, though. It's like a real slog to do the thing, but it is built for four players, and it's more or less like an SP experience, I would say, is kind of what I've tried to go for the most part. Basically, I've broken the rule of evolution here entirely, and just you basically ignore the top left of the card and treat everything as a basic Pokemon, and every ability is like a coming into play ability. If it would say like evolve this turn, it does X or whatever. So it really is a different experience for me, but I am trying to speed the cube up a little bit. I don't know if I want to go up in power level or go down in prize cards. One of those things is probably going to happen, because even though it's four players, I've had plenty of games that have gone over an hour in best of one.
Yes.
So it is a real, like, you feel great when you win these games, I feel like, because it's a genuine, like, tactical challenge. And I enjoy the power level and the intricacy of the format itself that I've sort of come up with. And the format, like, I actually started this cube thinking about my favorite way to play the game, and that's how this whole thing came about anyway, because my favorite eras of the TCG have all been big basic formats, because inherently I hate evolution in Pokemon. I think it makes every deck like so bad. You waste so many spaces to just not be consistent, and the snowball effect is just way more real when you like miss evolving pieces here and there. So I've completely taken them out of the game, and it's my favorite way to play Pokemon. So yeah.
Actually, yeah. I was gonna say one thing that we could touch on, I guess, real fast. And this is not like a, but like how people, you know, play games with their cubes after they're done drafting, right? So I'll say, I mean, I, as a competitive person, maybe this is why I enjoy Chips Cube so much, is when we draft Chips Cube, we do, you know, we take the eight people and we do a double elimination bracket style tournament. And Chip always has a pack that he gives the winner.
A prize.
Sweet pack. Yeah.
So that's my favorite way. But a lot of people do it differently, like Slutsky specifically. Like, you draft your decks and you just play games against other people's decks.
Round robin, never does just like play against everyone else, right?
Yeah, he never does like a tournament style thing or anything like that. I feel like most people do generally do some kind of tournament style thing. And that's definitely what I prefer. Some kind. Like, you don't even have to have anything on the line, but just like being like, okay, if you lose, once you lose these games, you're out. You know, it makes you want to win and like try that much harder. And the drafting is like a, you know, like I said, it's kind of 50-50 between drafting and playing. And the drafting is a huge part of it. But then I do like, you know, the aspect of like playing something forward. That's like another thing you can kind of tie to your cube as well, is like, what do you do once everyone's drafted their decks? What do you do at that point? You can do, like I said, like a lot of people do like round robin things, where it's like, that would work really well, like a four player cube for sure. Each player plays against each player once. Or like the chip cube, double elimination bracket. And then Chip always gives someone a pack at the end, which is nice. Like, give something to players to play for. So I thought we mentioned that real fast. I don't know if you guys want to say anything else about that as well.
I had a prize once where I had a small number of custom cards to fill out my eight-player draft. And I would allow the winner of the cube to, within reason, create a card to be added to the cube itself. So I'd cut like a supporter, and they would create like their name or whatever as the supporter effect, because it was all like my friend group and other players as like supporter and trainer cards and stuff like that. So that was a winner's sort of thing they could do. And you can do a similar thing with like art changes and whatnot. to a player's preference. There's a few different things you can do to sort of tip your cap to someone who's done well. And one of my other friends, actually, whenever a winning deck, they basically lock away the winning deck for the next draft. So whatever cards were drafted that time could not be drafted the next time you cube. So it sort of helps the balancing issue of, like, if anything's too strong, it's not going to come over. Like, it's not going to come up every single draft. You're not going to get annihilated by this card all the time. So there'll be times where the balance is slightly different based on what's been locked away, like one person's deck, and then it can come back into the fold the next time. That's been another real interesting thing to go for, because it gives that person the nod that they've done well and the deck's really good, but also it changes up the next draft as well. That's specifically cool. For the mutant one. Yeah.
I like that one a lot, actually. Yeah, that's actually super cool.
And that's one of the joys of cubing, is like whoever is curated it, they get to do whatever they want. They set the rules. And so something else I guess we could mention as well is, if you're listening to this and you're hoping to build a cube and you've not drafted a lot before, I wouldn't build a cube yet. I would take time and play a bunch of other people's cubes. There's always going to be a group at regionals trying to find another person. Just, you know, it's a great time to meet people as well. Just feel free to, I think most cube, you know, hosts would always welcome, you know, having someone come in and join their group. Because we want people to be able to experience it and have a good time with it. But, and always looking for that, you know, 7th, 8th person to fill it out anyway, right? So just that's what I would recommend anyway to people who are trying to build a cube, is play a bunch of different cubes. Play people's mutant cubes. Play traditional cubes. Try out the Darwin way. Try, you know, all basics, whatever it may be. Try these different things out and see what you like best. And you can copy someone's cube. There's nothing wrong with that. If you enjoyed, like, that's what I did with Puka's. I've built my cube is pretty much, like, I think it's within probably 20 cards of where Puka's cube is at right now, because it is my favorite way to cube, because I've done a bunch of different cubes and I enjoyed it the most. But, you know, play a bunch of different ones. And if you like mutant the best, build yourself a mutant cube. If you like the all basics strategy from Joe, you know, go with that. There's just tons of different ways to do it. And so I would say build to what you enjoy the best, definitely.
Yeah, try everything out. And yeah, I mean, like you said, like people... One of the things people draw to is just like their favorite eras of cards is where sometimes cubes start. But yeah, definitely try some cubes out and give that a shot for sure.
And something else that I mentioned, my two-player cube, something you'll see people, you know, Joe has a couple of different two-player cubes, and there's a few different ways you can draft when it comes to two players. You're not usually going to go the route of just opening up a 15-card pack and then passing it to the other person. You could do that, but usually there's a couple of different ways that people will do their drafts when it comes to drafting with just two players, and that'll be either through the Winchester method or the Winston method. Do you want to talk about kind of the differences here, Joe, and how you draft with just two players compared to... a full 6 or 8, and also maybe kind of just like when it comes to like deck construction itself, how you go about that as well?
Yeah, so it's obviously a different way of drafting. If it was just two players and you were doing like a take one, pass it along, it would be too obvious when you're up against one person to see like exactly what the opponent's going for, basically, because you just have every bit of information apart from their first pick, essentially. So in order to balance it differently, there's Winchester drafting, which is when there is a number of cards that are dealt face up, so both players are looking at the fresh cards that can be drafted from. One person will sort of divide the pile up in a certain way, and then the other player gets to choose which pile. So typically it means you're trying to draft relatively evenly. You don't really want to go down an avenue where you would hate it if they took one pile and love it if you got one, sort of thing. So it's a natural way of dividing things up. Think about it. This is what I used to do with my brother when we were kids, and we would fight over like food, for example. If you cut a pizza halfway down, you get your brother to do it, and then you get to pick the other half, right? So your brother then is incentivized to have it as balanced as possible straight down the line. And that's essentially Winchester drafting. But you go sort of pile by pile. If it's 10 cards, 4 cards, whatever it is, you have a equal balance. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's got to be 5 cards and 5 cards. It can be like 8 cards over here in one pile and 2 really strong cards over here. So you don't end up having the same number of cards in total drafted between the two players, but you still have to construct a deck out of whatever you draft. And it's a really interesting challenge where you can sort of see what your opponent's going for, and you can try and block things at the same time based on what you value from what's coming up. So it's a really, really cool method.
And you can also do other things too, where it's like if say you're doing 10 cards, for example, and there's one card you like want really, really bad, you could put that card with like a 4-card pile and then put 6 cards and add like a couple really good cards into that 6-card pile. So your opponent is going to be really incentivized to take the extra card to have, you know, that extra card advantage. And then also you've put like a really good card, but you're ensuring most likely that you're going to get the card that you really, really want for your deck. So there's a lot of cool intricacies with that for sure.
I think I've only ever done that. I think I did that once. It was actually, I did it once with JW. I played against him as Madison Regionals, and we played against each other, and our round ended really fast. And then he was just like, do you want to, what is it called? Winston or Winchester?
There's two like, different ways. Yeah. Like, this one's Winchester.
He's like, do you want to draft my cube real fast? I was like, oh, okay, sure. And then we did, I think it was the Winchester way to do it. So I've done it once before. With that, so it's definitely interesting, yeah, because it's like a different way to draft. You have to like balance out, you know, giving your opponent too many cards. Even if you get the card you want, you really want to give them 9 cards to make sure you get your one card, like, because card advantage does become a thing at some point where they just have that many more options with their end card pool at the end of the draft. So it definitely changes things up for sure.
And that's a fun way to do it. The way that I do my 2-player cube is the Winston style. So I'll just use my cube as an example. It's a 100-card pool, and then players build 40-card decks. So it's meant to be kind of just like a quick little cubing experience. You know, can do it in like an hour or less between 2 players. So you have the 100-card draft pile shuffled up, totally randomized. And then from that draft pile, you'll set out 1, 2, 3 different face down cards. Player 1 will look at the first card and they'll determine, do I want to add this to my draft pile or do I not really want this card? If they want it, they'll add it to their draft pile. And then they'll take a card from the draft pool and put it to that to replace the card that they just took effectively. So now there's still 3 face down cards. Player 2 now gets to go. They'll look at that first card again, which is the card that just got added from the pool. They'll look at that card, and if say they don't want this card, they'll set it back face down in the same spot, add a card from the draft pool to that pack. So now that first pile is 2 cards that are face down. They know what the bottom card is, but don't know what the card is they just added. And then now they go to the second card. They get to look at it and say, okay, do I want to take it or not? If they do, they add it, and then they'll add another card to replace, so on and so forth. And you do it that way until you get down to the end of the 100 cards and then build your 40-card decks from there. So you're kind of incentivized to take cards because otherwise you're adding, you know, creating bigger and bigger packs for your opponent to potentially take, where sometimes they'll have maybe 3, even 4 cards in it, where even if they're all kind of mediocre, just having more cards to work with, more options, can be a benefit. And then sometimes you'll get down to the end all the way to the 3rd pile and it's a card that you don't want still, so you'll leave it face down, add a card from the draft pool to that pile, and then you just get a random card off the top, and whatever it is, that's your card that you're stuck with. Sometimes it can be a really good one, and sometimes it can be totally useless to your deck. So that's a fun way to do it, because you also get it's a little bit more, there's less knowledge than a Winchester, because you don't literally see every single card like you would with a Winchester, but there's also still, like, you have an idea of, like, ooh, if I give them this really powerful stage 1, there's a chance they already have that basic because we're getting a little late here. I haven't seen the basic. So do I want to take that away from them? Or you can also remember, oh, I saw that at the bottom of a 3-card pile earlier that I didn't take. They ended up taking it. Okay, I know they have this other piece. I want to cut them off of not being able to have it. So kind of just fun ways to play with just a couple of people, where just passing 10-card packs or 15-card packs back and forth would be a little bit, I would say, a little less fun.
Yeah. I guess the only other way you could do it would be like 3-card packs or something, right? Like you have the stack of cards, you each draw 3, and then because that way you have enough first picks that your opponent doesn't know about.
Sure.
And they'd have like the knowledge of the 2 cards. But those other 2 ways are definitely like make things really, really interesting for sure, and definitely switch up the way you draft. Would it ever be possible to, like, you couldn't ever do one of those. Could you do those with like 8 people? That sounds difficult in my head.
I've done a four-player Winston before, which is fine. I think once you get eight people, though, there's little reason to do anything besides the traditional 15-card pack, because that's just kind of the tried-and-true proven way. I mean, I'd be down to experiment sometime, try it out the other way. I don't think you could do a Winchester. I guess you could do a Winchester with more than just two people. It would just have to be, like, the person to your right is the person picking the packs the way you've set them out. Could be kind of interesting. And then everyone at the table is still seeing all of the cards, right? I don't know. I would imagine you probably have never done a Winchester or Winston with more than two people, Joe.
Only ever two. Yeah.
So let's take a quick little break from the cube talk here and get into everyone's favorite segment of the cast, of course, Guess That Flavor Text, where we pick a card, read the flavor text, and the other host usually has to guess what it may be. But of course, we have a guest this week, so it will be Joe's opportunity to guess along. So, Joe, I know you said you listen to the cast every single week. How do you usually do when it comes to Guess That Flavor Text?
I'm hit and miss. I've had a couple early correct ones, but also a few flops. So hopefully I'm going to be okay here.
So Joe knows how this game works, but for anyone listening along at home that doesn't, Azul and I will read this text off to Joe. He has an opportunity to guess it. If he doesn't want to guess initially, we have three different lifelines to choose from. If he guesses without lifelines, he gets 4 points. For each lifeline he uses, he loses a point. So we've got the three different lifelines being what set the card is from, what stage the card is, and then finally read an attack name. How are you feeling, Joe? You ready?
Go for it.
All right, Azul, you want to read the card? You got it pulled up?
Sure, I got it. All right. Fleeing a volcanic eruption, it settled on a snowy mountain. As it races through the snowfields, it sends up a spray of snow.
Okay. Fleeing from a volcanic mountain. Wow.
Volcanic eruption.
Eruption.
Fleeing a volcanic eruption, it settled on a snowy mountain. As it races through the snowfields, it sends up a spray of snow.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay, there's nothing jumping out at me straight away. Sends up a spray of snow. Okay, I'm going to go for... let's go for what stage the card is.
It is stage one.
Stage one Pokemon. Okay, I'm still not close to anything, really. Let's go for read an attack name.
Attack name is Smash Turn.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Some hit and run stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Can I get it one more time?
Your flavor text?
Yeah.
Fleeing a volcanic eruption, it settled on a snowy mountain. As it races through the snowfields, it sends up a spray of snow.
Man, it's so strange. Right, it's hit smash turn, hit and run. Ooh, okay. How many points do you guys both have?
We're both at two.
So if you guess now, you would tie us.
Okay.
This is episode 20. So we're Azul and I have each had 9 guesses, I guess, at this point, because Andrew got one at some point.
Okay. I think Smash Turn is Alolan Sandslash, and that is a stage one. So I'll go for Alolan Sandslash.
Yep.
That is correct. No. Congratulations, Joe. Sandslash, Alolan Sandslash from Guardians Rising.
Yeah, that's actually been a card in my cube as well. Slush Rush.
I didn't read the card fully once Chip sent it to me, and I was like, okay, this would be fine. Like, I read the flavor text. I didn't read the attack, but immediately when I read the flavor text, I looked at the attack name. I was like, oh, he can probably get it off the attack name, because I think I would have gotten this. I've played this card in a deck before a long time ago. I was like, oh, the Smash Turn. It's like the only card I know that has Smash Turn. All right, Joe tied us up.
Yes, he did. Congratulations, Joe. And let us know down in the YouTube comments if you are watching along at home. What's your score? Did you get this one right? Did you get it wrong? And congrats to Joe getting a couple of points here. Yeah, I thought this would be a fun pick because I'm sure this is a card. This is in your two-player cube, isn't it? I believe so. Are you not your two? Your all basics cube, I think, right?
It's in the basics cube. There was a time it was in the main cube as well. So you've been generous to me.
This is a common cube card. This type of thing, like a decent little attack with an ability that can draw you cards. So I thought it was a fitting pick for this week's episode. So to close things out here, just for a few minutes, let's just chat about our kind of favorite cubes. We've talked about this a little bit throughout, or any other maybe, I guess a good thing to do here as well would just be cubing tips. So if someone is maybe drafting for the first time, or they've drafted a few times and kind of find themselves ending up with not the strongest deck, what kind of drafting tips do you think you would have for someone when it comes to, you know, looking at the card pool, trying to figure out how they want to go about building their deck?
From me, I mean, the general laws of a Pokemon deck apply. So you always want to value very good supporters and search cards quite high. I think specifically for cubes, the value of recovery is massive. And I also think switching cards are very underrated. These are such like fundamentals of giving you flexibility in the game. Oftentimes you'll only get like one or two attackers that stand out above the rest. So having recovery for those is really huge. So I think those are things you really shouldn't underrate. Like a card like Clara, we see it in standard now and again, and it's obviously a strong card, but it is bananas in cube. It's like by far the best first pick, I think, in anyone's cube, no matter the power level, because it's like, it's actually so insane. So really have to respect those sorts of things. Keep an eye on like your basic count as well, because you don't want to just have like three like Piplups and that's your gang. You want to have some other stuff here and there, because you still need to feed people prizes here and there where you get set up and do stuff. And yeah, I mean, it depends on the flow of the cube, obviously, but traditional laws of a deck are still there. I would also say that most people underdraft energy. And this is quite natural because it's hard to cut cards from your draft pool, and it always feels bad, especially if it's like an earlier pick or whatever that you end up not using. Some people can get like attached to them or thought it was going to be a really good card that ends up not being as useful potentially. But typically you draw less cards than you would in standard. So like that 7 to 9 energy just ain't going to cut it. You normally want to bump those numbers up a little bit more and not miss out on an energy drop unless you just happen to be playing a very cheap, efficient attacking deck, where you can sort of break those rules. But those are all things you want to sort of keep in mind. Like, what's your deck really trying to do? What's its ideal first opening turns? And how difficult is it for you to continue attacking throughout the entire game? Do you need to have healing in here? Will you be having to pay retreat out of stuff to keep like a drawing ability in play? These are all things you need to think about as your deck is coming together, I would say.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, you just have to kind of draft for the first time to get a little bit of a feel for it. I think one of the things to kind of go back on a little bit that we kind of touched on is like, people kind of build their cubes, and the way like a good cube is built is that no card is truly terrible or like bad, right? So you, when you're drafting, you can keep that in mind as well, especially when you're newer to drafting. Like, you see these cards and like, yeah, you know, something like a draw three supporter has never been good in standard. But in a cube, if you don't have any good draw supporters at that point, you don't just want to take another Pokemon that you maybe will get another line for. Maybe you should just like get that draw supporter of some kind, right? So there definitely is like there's like a balance to the cube around everything, but there's also a balance to what you're drafting around the balance of the cube as well. So also getting familiar with the cube sometimes is going to help. Like, everyone's probably first draft, especially if you're newer to drafting with a cube you've never played before, is going to be a little bit rough, right? Because everyone's cube is so different. But once you kind of have played with the cube a couple times, it gets a lot easier to start drafting it. But yeah, just I think the one of the biggest things, like from what we talked about, is just like, yeah, every card is in there, and generally if it's a good cube, no card is like truly terrible. So you always want to kind of stop and think about all the different cards that you see for each pack.
Yeah, I would say think about the first like constructed standard Pokemon deck you built. It probably wasn't very good, right? That would be true, I would say, for most, if not all, Pokemon players. The first deck you built without, like, you know, pulling a list off the internet. The same is going to be true the first time you draft a cube. It is probably not going to go great. You're going to have a rough time. You're going to learn about it. And then it'll make you want to hop right back in and draft one more time to prove that, like, okay, I figured it out a little bit. You know, I've got a bit of a way to, you know, get back into things, and I've learned from my past mistakes. And that would be, you know, the more you cube, the better you will get at it, for sure. It, which I think is true for just about most things in life. The more you practice, the more practiced you are, the better you will become at things. So don't be discouraged if your first cubing experience does not go the best.
Definitely.
So I know you've got a couple of different cubes, Joe. You want to just talk to us? I've got them pulled up here on the Cube Koga, about each of these that you've built, kind of what your favorite ones are, which ones are the ones that you lean into playing the most, or kind of where how you got to this point with, I mean, because for most people, just having one cube is like a big investment. But you've got all of these. I don't think you have built IRL, right? But you've got a couple built IRL, yes?
Yeah, so I've got the 8-player IRL, like traditional evolution built, and I've also got the all basics built IRL. The rest are just online cubes only, but the original, just sort of traditional evolution, it's been going for a few years. I think I started it in 2017. I am a hoarder of cards, so I just never have thrown away or traded or done anything with any of my cards ever, so I naturally have like a lot of older cards I've been collecting for a long time. And this is trying to be quite a high power level single prizer. So it's quite fast paced. There are like 140 to 160 hit point stage twos. One hit KOs are possible here and there. I've tried to have a ton of draw in all of my evolution lines. So no matter what line you're in, you're probably drawing cards and getting stuff done, which I am a big fan of. I think I've got a decent balance like into synergies as well. So just because you're drafting like Yanmegas doesn't mean you need to draft Venusaurs. They could be completely separate. You can splash them in with Lightning or Psychic or whatever else. I've got a lot of my sort of favorite evolutions in there as well. It's not a strict singleton. There's a few two ofs. Sometimes that's for balancing reasons, just for how high a power level I've put on things. And I've got also like a high count of like N style supporters and Ball Search as well. So I want it basically to reflect kind of like 0708 kind of feel, but obviously a much higher power level than that. When 0708 was a lot of stage twos and stage ones roaming around, and I've already pushed it down that direction where you're basically rewarded for evolving. Yeah, just a ton of draw in there as well. So that's kind of the main emphasis I've gone for here, where there aren't many feels bad cards in here. There's not much like early disruption, there's not like Let Loose, there's no red card, there's nothing like that. I've tried to have as much of a feels good cube as possible, really, where it's just good, clean fun, and N is really the only disruption, which both players are kind of in control of. And that's what I was looking for with that one. And then the all basics cube is very different entirely, where it's a real long slog, where, like I said, as Chip knows, hour long games are pretty common, I would say. And it's a tactical back and forth. Things don't necessarily snowball out of control, where because the hit points and attack damage is in a range where every single turn you're getting that energy drop down, you're never really running out of attackers here or there. I give everyone Swoop Teleporter for free as well, so you can jump in and out into different attackers. So there's a lot of variety going on. You can easily end up having like 15 different Pokemon in your deck, and there'll be situational at times, useful setup mons here and there, different type coverages going on, just a real back and forth, and you can still carve out some synergies here and there. And it's gone through a few different balancing phases. I think it's at a reasonable spot right now. I'm still actually hoping for more cards to be released. I think realistically, I'm looking at like stage ones these days of evolving stage two Pokemon and hoping they're interesting enough, because that's kind of the power level that I'm at, where I think 140 hit points is an anomaly of like the highest hit points, and 90 hit points is the lowest. Yeah, I think Steelix Prime is my highest hit point Pokemon, and like a Venusaur as well. So it's kind of around that EX era and the Diamond and Pearl era for the majority of these cards, I would say. And yeah, it's just, although I don't think the draft is that much fun, because everyone gets a very easily functioning deck, and because it's four players, you see a pack enough times to get things going like pretty easily. It's meant to be a very consistent experience. The gameplay is really where I think this one shines.
Okay. Definitely.
I'm just curious, what is your, outside of your cubes, what is your favorite cube that you've played with?
I've played a lot, you know. Let me look at Cube Koga so I'm not missing anyone out. I think one of my favorites is, it's a Delta Eevees cube where there's a big emphasis on Eeveelution Pokemon. So there's like a ton of Eevees, and I think everyone gets a free Eevee here and there. And that's entirely focused on the EX era. So it's quite a low power level, again, like quite long games. That's kind of what I'm a bigger fan of, where you have time to come back into the game and you can carve out like long strategies everywhere. And they have a few interesting like custom cards as well that allows you to, you're allowed to evolve in a mutant way exactly for Delta Pokemon. So it's like, it's traditional evolution, but Delta species Pokemon can mutant their way up into lines as well. So it's got that interesting splash of like best of that era, as well as having a more consistent like evolution line here and there. So I think that's one of the most interesting ones. We did it for a Champions Cube, and I think I built just a big basics deck, actually. I completely ignored the fact that you could evolve in a mutant way. but it was a fun gameplay element, I think.
Yeah, it's a cool one. I'm looking at it now on Cube Koga. I've never seen it. And it looks like one of the more popular ones as well. So definitely
we've done it in the league a few times for sure. Yeah.
Seems fun for sure. Very cool. Yeah, I've done a few different cubes, like I said, and I don't really like, I think like the chaos cube way is my favorite because it's the one I ended up building, and it does put the highest emphasis on drafting, which I think, you know, the gameplay is fun obviously still, but I think like that is the thing that differentiates it from, you know, just playing a constructive format, right? Because if I just want to play like a really fun game of Pokemon, I've got like all these old decks and stuff that I can play, like 06 or 2010, whatever. There's a lot of fun different ways to, and you know, I guess standard, whatever, but probably not. but cubing, the thing that makes it different is the drafting process. And so since the Chaos Cube puts the highest emphasis on drafting, that's kind of what I have leaned into. But I would say just like cubing in general is a ton of fun. I'm always down to try other people's cubes. One of my favorite things I've said a few times is just how unique each different cube can be depending on how the curator has built it. And so just trying a bunch of them out is just something I'm always looking forward to. Joe's Big Basics, when I did that at EUIC, it was the first time I'd ever done a cube like that. And I did not have a good draft because I didn't really, I'd never done something like that. So it didn't go very well. And after it was all said and done, I was like, you know, I want to try this again. I want to get back into it and try to give it another shot to show that I can, you know, build something a little bit better than the first one I built for that. But yeah, Joe, if you want to talk, we've talked about the Cube League a few times here. You mentioned it earlier on. If people wanted to get more involved there and learn about it, how would they go about doing something like that?
I'm pretty sure the Cube Koga is essentially the only website you need to know, because I think under their content section, they have links to all of this stuff as well. It shows you the Google Drafter. It gives you other content based around Cube. There is a Cube specific podcast as well. I don't think they're running anymore, but it still has a ton of great podcast information. I think it was just done during COVID actually as well. So very recent and up to date from very experienced Cube people. So cubekoga.net is literally the only website you need to know, and then the Cube League Discord, I can either link to you or do something like that to let people get in there straight away. And yeah, there's a ton of conversation about Cube, not just playing itself, and they've got some great organizers making sure there are lots of cubes running most weeks.
Sweet. Azul, any other thoughts on cubing?
No, I think we covered most things. Everything I want to ask Joe, I think I did, and things that I was curious about. And I think this will be, got a lot of information out there. I'm sure a lot of people had no idea about. I didn't know about Cube Koga. I just went and looked on the site right now. There's a lot of cubes on there.
I've spent so long on this site.
Joe also has several videos on his YouTube channel. They're all linked here in the content section of the Cube Koga. Wow. talking about just different ways to, you know, a lot of the information we've gone over in this podcast, if you want to re-reference it, it'll probably be in a lot of these videos. A lot of articles out there as well to reference. So we appreciate you, Joe, for coming on and taking time to do this. We love Cuban. We know you love it too. So it was a good fit, I think. And I hope that anyone watching along at home who is interested in cubing, you got some of their questions answered, or maybe if you weren't interested in cubing, you now are a little bit more. So thank you all so much for listening. Joe, you got anything you want to plug or shout out before we wrap things up here?
Just that if you're going to Worlds, I'll be bringing 3 cubes in my car. So keep an eye out for me. I'll be handing them out to myself and friends, and we'll try and get lots of groups going together. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you, Joe, coming on. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. If you enjoyed the cast this week, as always, please be sure to leave a like on the YouTube video, subscribe to the YouTube channel, or if you are listening along, be sure to leave us a review, a rating on your podcasting platform of choice. If you want to get connected with any of us, the best way to do that is going to be usually over on Twitter, myself at TrainerChip, Azul at Azul_GG, and Joe is at Omni_Joe. You can also follow the podcast at Uncommon_Energy. And yeah, we really appreciate everything. And thank you once again, Joe, for your time.
Yeah. Thanks again for watching. Thanks again for Joe coming on, and we'll catch you all next week. Peace.